Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us. Richard, how's it going?
Great, David. As you know, well, I literally just rolled in from Montgomery, Alabama, where I'd been, I had a hearing this morning for one of our clients, and went really well. I want to just tell you briefly about it because we never know when we go to these hearings what we're going to run into. Is the hearing officer or the judge going to be prepared for us, or are they just kind of sitting there letting us put our case in and then they're going to work on it later on? Well, this judge was terrific, absolutely terrific. She was prepared. I put my case in, and then she had great questions to ask our client, and it went really well. And we also, the judge and I actually talked about the VA. And she informed me that there are now 26 new BVA judges. And they came on board as of about the 2nd of February. I asked her how did they slip in because of the hiring freeze. And she said that they were actually put in there by Obama. And as long as they, they were confirmed prior to January the 20th, but they had to be able to be on board by February the 2nd. So, David, we have 26 new judges.
That's definitely a positive start in the right direction.
And she also, we were talking about the delays, and she indicated that currently the Board of Veteran Appeals, and all of you veterans, if you have appeals before the Board of Veteran Appeals, figure out when your case was certified, and you'll have an idea of when it might be heard. She indicated that at this point, they're hearing the January 2013 appeals. So
wow.
That's 4 years.
Wow. That's just incredible. Totally unacceptable. I mean, our veterans deserve a lot better than that. And we've got a hearing tomorrow in St. Petersburg, a case that fortunately hasn't been pending that long. We'll have to see how that one goes. Thanks for sharing your experience, Richard. Tonight I'd like to, I know we both have a lot on the agenda. We're going to talk about more developments in Washington as far as the Department of Veterans Affairs. We're going to spotlight some proposed legislation in our new military humor segment. We'll offer some levity for your listening enjoyment. And in our ongoing Veterans History segment, with a nod to African American History Month being February, we'll recognize some famous African American veterans. And next after that, we're going to give a shout-out to volunteer programs that you can join to help veterans and the VA. And then in our final segment called Hurley's Tips, Richard Hurley will share some very practical and very useful information for our veterans.
Well, let's start with developments this past week, David. Past week, the Senate Committee on Veteran Affairs voted to confirm the nomination of Dr. David Shulkin as the new secretary. The confirmation process now moves to the full Senate, which is expected to easily vote to confirm him. The next stage will be to see after that how quickly Congress and Secretary Shulkin can work together to fix major problems in the VA, as we have discussed in previous weeks. I should add that the judge that I was in front of today had very favorable things to say about Dr. Shulkin. In fact, she said that Dr. Shulkin has been working with the BVA over the last year and a half. What working means, I have no idea. But she sees a bright future at this point.
That's good to hear.
You know, one of the things that they're going to have to address right now is the understaffing. Right now, there are 45,000 people that could get jobs there, most on the health side. About 37,000 on the health side, although the benefit side is clearly broken with its ridiculous backlog of disability appeals. That takes years to resolve. You know, they put on 26 new judges, David. Maybe they'll start thinking about adding some more DROs. You pointed out in the past that there are currently 28 or 30 decision review officers in St. Pete, and there are approximately 30,000 cases, and we should at least quadruple that number
in order to back them up. Right.
Otherwise, in news of interest to veterans include new legislation offered in Congress. Of course, whether the bills end up going anywhere depends on veterans making their voices heard above the constant noise and confusion in Washington. Also, remember that not every bill is a good idea. Even bills with good ideas can include some very bad ideas buried in the details. So pay attention to those details. For example, the major bill to hold the VA accountable also will take away some valuable rights which veterans currently have in their disability appeals, such as requiring the VA to assist them in developing the evidence needed to have their claims granted. Now, I want to remind our listeners that if you would like to, if you have a question or a comment, call us now or during the rest of the show. Our number is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. So, David, what about some of those proposed laws?
Well, one that has really gotten my attention that I've talked briefly about in the past, but I want to talk a little bit about more this evening, and hopefully our listeners will share their opinions and share them with Congress as well. There's a bill pending in the House of Representatives. There's a similar one in the Senate. The House bill is H.R. 611. It's called the VA Accountability First and Appeals Modernization Act of 2017. It's a very lengthy bill that has two major goals. One is to make it easier for the VA to hold its employees accountable, make it easier for the Secretary of the VA to demote or fire employees who need to go. The other major goal is to make changes in the current disability claims appeals process. And it's that part of the law that would end, if it were passed into law, it would end the VA's current legal duty to assist veterans in developing their claims after the VA makes its first decision on the case. And let me give a little background to this. Currently, the way the law is, a veteran files a claim either alone or with representation by a veteran service officer or in some cases a lawyer. They file a claim with the regional office who has a duty to assist. And that what that means is basically assist the veteran in getting records, medical records, telling the veteran what's needed in order to be successful in the case. You would think that's the way it's supposed to be because the system is not supposed to be adversarial for our veterans, all right? Well, under the current law, the way the law is now between the statute and appellate court decisions, that duty to assist continues even after the first decision. So let's say the regional office denies the claim and the veteran appeals it. Well, that duty to assist on the part of the VA continues at the next couple stages. Well, this proposed bill, this H.R. 611, would eliminate that. And that's buried in the fine print among quite a bit of other detail about how they're going to totally revamp the claims and the appeals process. I mean, totally revamp it from the way it is now. Now, what's really interesting about this proposal is that it didn't come out of thin air. I mean, there's going back to March of last year, there was a working group that consisted of major veterans groups, representatives of the Veterans Benefit Administration and the Board of Veterans Appeals, who were working together to try to figure out how are they going to fix things. And they quickly realized that if they're going to fix the appeals, they have to address some of the claims issues. Well, their ideas included revamping veterans' options, but in doing so, they took away, or they would propose to take away, this duty to assist. I think that's a terrible idea, and I really want to highlight it. That's one of the purposes of this radio show, is to get the word out to veterans. Please let your voices be heard on this bill. It has some good ideas as far as VA accountability, but they're totally revamping the claims and the appellate procedure, and they leave so many questions unanswered. I think they're just going to substitute basically one hamster wheel that the veterans have to tread on now for a couple more. Another very bad idea in this bill is that it would eliminate the duty of the first-level appellate review officer, what's called a decision review officer. It would eliminate the duty of that decision review officer to accept new evidence. In other words, that review officer would only be looking at the evidence as it existed at the time it was denied, which is usually, from our experience, pretty poorly developed. In the cases that get denied or there's a low rating, they're poorly developed, either through a combination of the VA doesn't do a very good job assisting the veteran, and most veteran service officers, they don't do enough to prepare cases. They put way too much faith in the VA rather than trying to build a strong case for the veteran. So overall, I would give that part of the bill a big thumbs down. However, the strange thing, as I said, there are major veterans groups that backed a similar version that passed the House last fall. It didn't get passed by the Senate. So of the many bills before Congress that are affecting veterans, this is a huge potential game changer that's going to affect things for decades without really solving the current backlog problem. In fact, just today I was reading a very lengthy document that was put out by the Disabled American Veterans, Paralyzed Veterans of America, and Veterans of Foreign Wars in the United States, those three major vet groups, that put together a document they call the Independent Budget, the Veterans Agenda for the 115th Congress, which is the Congress we're in now. And it has a detailed discussion of these proposals, which I just talked about. And they, by their own admission, and I have to give them credit for being honest about it, by their own admission, there are a lot of unanswered questions, and those include the fact is, if they add this whole new appellate process on top of what's already in existence, which has a backlog of somewhere in the neighborhood of about 460,000 to 480,000 cases, how is the system going to function with now two separate rules? How will the appellate court sort out? It's just prime for more litigation and more trouble and more hassle for the veterans. So, my advice to, veterans out there, pay attention to what's going on. Don't just put faith that your veterans groups are going to be looking out for you, because strangely enough, I don't know why, but they don't always do that. I mean, I've had some veterans tell me that they think some of these veteran groups, particularly on the national level, are too much in cahoots with the VA for any number of reasons. And it's almost symbolized by the fact that, at your regional office and other VA facilities, these veteran groups will have their own office space in the VA. It just looks like they're a little bit too close in terms of their shared interests. So, Richard, what are some of the other things that you've observed?
Sounds pretty complicated. Sounds like they're trying to complicate things even more than they already are.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the intent is probably these people probably thought that they need to fix certain problems. But I'll tell you what, this working group included people from the VA and the Board of Veterans Appeals, along with these veteran groups. And what's really funny is when you read the veteran group's analysis of it, and I'll quote, it says, VA places the greatest weight on providing veterans the maximum opportunity to support their appeals in order to receive favorable decisions rather than seeking to limit the workload of its employees. I think that's totally laughable, because they're doing exactly the opposite here. They're
right.
Proposing to take away the duty to assist. They're proposing to make it easier for these DROs, decision review officers, to continue to deny cases in the first level of appeals. And they really have done nothing in this bill to address how are they going to solve this tremendous backlog, which many people, as we've mentioned on prior shows, many people in the VA and out of the VA have predicted the waiting times on appeals could double and possibly even triple in the next decade.
David, the VA was set up so that with the whole duty to assist, so that the veteran who separates from the military could go to the VA, and the VA would work with them, and if there's some compensation there, they would put him through the right exams and hopefully come up with the right rating, and basically a pretty simple process. And
right.
It just seems like it's getting more and more complicated as the years go by, as opposed to simplifying. But
right,
in any
right.
event, there's another bill of interest to veterans who served in the military long enough to earn a military pension. It's H.R. 303, offered by Congressman Gus Bilirakis of Florida. It is called the Retired Pay Restoration Act. If passed, this bill would allow the receipt of both military retired pay and veterans' disability compensation with respect to any service-connected disability. Currently, the law allows concurrent receipt of both a military pension and VA disability compensation only for a combined disability rating of 40% or more. Individuals who were retired or separated from military service due to a service-connected disability shall be eligible for the full concurrent receipt of both veterans' disability compensation, either military retired pay or combat-related special pay. You know, David, you and I see this every once in a while with our own clients. And
right.
Just recently, I had a client say to me, he's getting 40% plus the he's getting military retired pay, and he's been rated 40%. And as he said, I'm paying myself.
Yeah, the only benefit he gets is basically the fact that the VA portion of it is not taxable, unlike his military pension. But you're right, that's the consistent complaint that I've heard for a number of years. The law has changed over the years. Congress has tinkered with it and passed some what were relatively complex rules on this, but this bill is designed to eliminate that. The problem that veterans are essentially paying for their own disability out of their military pension. And, I track pretty closely social media and other veterans' information on the Internet. And this H.R. 303 that you mentioned is one that a lot of veterans are, who are retirees from the military, are really concerned about. They see Congress playing around with these other bills, some of which are more symbolic, and they're kind of icing on the cake, but this is something that means something to them financially. So I think another example... Go ahead.
I spoke to Bill Arrakis's secretary the other day, and we talked about H.R. 303, and she said it's never made it out of committee. By the way, as you know, David, Gus Bill Arrakis is the number two man on the Veterans Committee. So... anybody who wants to reach out for him, they can either call his office or contact the Veterans Committee up in D.C. Another of Bill Arrakis's bill is H.R. 936, allowing space available travel benefit for disabled veterans. The space available travel program is a benefit rightfully extended to all military retirees, allowing them to travel on military aircraft when there is extra space on board. Currently, this benefit excludes veterans who are 100% disabled. He introduced the Special Priority on Aircrafts and Coverage Equity Act, Space A, last week to extend the benefit to all veterans who are 100% disabled. If there is space available for travel on a military aircraft, our 100% disabled veterans should have access to be on that flight. Space A has received support from veterans of foreign wars, the American Military Retiree Association, American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, the National Federation of the Blind, and the Blinded Veterans Association.
Yeah, that's another one of these bills that quite frankly, I don't see a whole lot of groundswell of veterans, expecting Space A flight. There must be some, and there must be enough that they convinced Congressman Bill Arrakis and these other veteran groups to put it on their agenda. But there's some other ones, too, that I want to just briefly mention that will probably get the attention of Vietnam veterans. There's two in particular. One that was introduced just in the last week or so by Congressman Dennis Ross from Florida. It was to basically expand the presumptions of service connection relating to the exposure to herbicides, often referred to as Agent Orange, but there were other herbicides as well, that were used extensively in Vietnam, but they're also used in other places. And it's been a point of contention with a lot of veterans. They see that that their comrades who served in Vietnam to receive this very generous presumption that they were exposed to Agent Orange, and then if they get any of these diseases, they would be service-connected for disability compensation. But Congressman Ross's bill, if enacted into law, would expand the coverage to include not only on the ground in Vietnam, but the territorial seas of the Republic of Vietnam. It would include the island of Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, and also the American Samoa. And I've watched the media coverage in the Tampa Bay area in the last couple of weeks, and they had a story, one of the local stations, about this bill. And one of Congressman Ross's constituents in Lakeland, retired Air Force senior NCO who had been stationed on Guam, and said part of his duties back during the Vietnam era was to actually spray thousands of gallons of Agent Orange defoliant to kill the vegetation around the base there, and he personally sprayed it. So, you know, he had that contact more than simply having been on the island or in Vietnam. But right now, the way the law is, Guam is not under the Agent Orange presumption, and this veteran has suffered from a number of cancers and other things that would be on the Agent Orange list. So Congressman Ross's bill is one that's going to get a lot of attention, also because it's similar to another bill. Well, first of all, Congressman Ross's bill is H.R. 809, for those of you interested in that level of detail. But there's another bill in the House of Representatives, H.R. 299. It's got 175 co-sponsors as of a couple days ago. It's called the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2017, which would include, as part of the Agent Orange presumption for service connection, those that served in the territorial sea, what they call the Blue Water, the Deep Water Navy veterans. The way the law currently is if you set foot in Vietnam, or if you were what they call the Brown Water Navy, meaning the inland waters, the muddy waters of Vietnam, close to the land, or you set foot on land, then they'll presume you were exposed to Agent Orange. Well, this law would expand it significantly beyond that, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think there are those that think that the current law is already plenty generous, and the critics are going to say that this law would be going even much further than that. And of course, in Washington D.C., a lot of the decisions are budgetary decisions, so they're going to have to look at how much this is going to cost. And then you're probably going to get some critics from that perspective. Richard, what are your thoughts, David, on these?
Well, you know, we've had clients who were on ships who were blue water, and you know, I'll ask them, you know, how far were they? And they said they could see land, they could see everything, they could see the bombing going on, but because they were in blue water, they were not, they didn't get the presumption of service connection. However, you know, they would tell me about, you know, seeing all the white dust all over the ship, and you know, they would laugh, and they all knew what it was. It wasn't snowing out there, and so they definitely felt that they were exposed. But because their ship was technically in blue water, they weren't eligible for the presumption of service connection for the herbicide agents. So I think you're going to have a lot of veterans who are going to be happy. Let's just hope they get this thing done before some of them die, you know? Because they got to file the claim for it, and that's going to take 2 years, and then you know what the time is. And
right. Well, it'll be interesting to see whether it even gets out of committee. But with 175 co-sponsors on this one bill, H.R. 299, the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2017, that's a lot of co-sponsors, and maybe that'll be enough to at least get some attention in the committee. But in any event, we'll track that. What I do encourage veterans that are interested would be to follow the legislation yourself. You can also listen to our radio show. We'll keep you updated. But if you go to the website for the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House of Representatives, it's a very easy website to remember. It's veterans.house.gov. Veterans.house.gov, and the Senate committee is similar. It's veterans.senate.gov, and you can find out if any members of your state are on the committee, which certainly would be useful for you to contact them. And on each of their websites, they'll have information about the proposed legislation. They'll have a schedule for their hearings, and most of the hearings are live streamed over the internet, so you can actually watch the hearings in progress. You can read the testimony that's been submitted in writing, and follow it and submit your own viewpoint. I mean, this is it's your government, and if you think that things are just magically going to happen the right way, you're mistaken. You have to have some input, and there's a lot of people out there with a lot of good ideas, and a lot of veterans that are in you know, situations that these laws will personally affect them. And I'll just give you one example, because on the Senate committee website, they've got a list of more than a dozen bills that have been filed with their committee. And here's just one interesting example, kind of a reminder about the Cold War era that our country went through, but also the real impact on veterans. And this, there's a bill filed with the Senate. It's Senate Bill 283, which would provide for the treatment of veterans who participate in the cleanup of a Pacific Island group of islands called Aniwetok Atoll that was used, some of you may remember from history, it was used for nuclear bomb testing. So there was significant radiation contamination. And these veterans, their military duties were to clean that place up so it eventually could become habitable again. But in any event, so this proposed bill is to make it easier for those veterans to receive disability compensation for the cancers and other diseases that they've suffered because of radiation exposure. So that's just one example. I'm not going to bore you with all the other bills, but you can check them out yourself. Again, the website is veterans.senate.gov for the Senate side and veterans.house.gov for the House side. So a lot of information. We'll try to keep it straightforward and clear for you each week. So,
you know,
Greg, why don't we move on?
The want to remind veterans that, and I've said this, I don't know, maybe it was on our first show, you know, the efforts to fix the VA is not only something to try to get done today and for the benefit of our current veterans, but future veterans. So, you
right.
know, this system has been broken for quite a while, and it would be incumbent upon us to start to fix it so that these younger veterans will not have as much turmoil to go through as the current veterans have. So, you know, let's start working now, but I saw the bills that you sent over to me, and there's a lot of information there, so much that it can be overwhelming.
Absolutely, it can be overwhelming, and it can be overwhelming for lawyers. So I'm always reminded about what it is for those that are blessed not to be lawyers, but unfortunately have to live under these laws and the ridiculous complexity of some of them, and the fact that the VA appellate system is totally broken. We're trying to fix the system and get the word out for people to pay attention. It'll help them, and it'll certainly help future generations if it can be fixed in a way that still protects their rights, which is to fair compensation in a reasonably timely manner and a non-adversarial way. It's not supposed to be, adversarial. So, in any event, we'll continue this segment. Go ahead.
It's all pretty serious stuff there, David. And as
yep.
you indicated before, we're going to have a new segment called the New Military and Veterans Humor Segment.
Yes.
And there's nothing more well-known in the military than the natural clash between officers and enlisted ranks. So it's appropriate to begin with this classic. I'm sure you're very familiar with this, David.
Yep.
An Airman Basic E-1 at Lackland Air Force Base received his first two-hour pass to go to the base exchange. While he was playing a pinball machine, a second lieutenant came up to him and asked if he had change for a quarter. He responded, not yet militarized. The brand new airman said, sure, how do you want it? All nickels or dimes? Or two dimes and a nickel? The Butterbar lieutenant said, listen, airman, I'm an officer, so you should call me sir. Now let's try it again. Airman, do you have change for a quarter? The airman replied smartly, no, sir, I sure don't.
Yeah, I think that's just about right. It does something,
you know,
well.
You know, we represent veterans from all the branches of the military, and it's obvious that each branch has its own history and mindset. One reason the Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marines are so different is that they don't speak the same language. For instance, take the simple phrase, secure the building. The Army will post guards around the place. The Navy will turn out the lights and lock the doors. The Marines will kill everybody inside and set up headquarters. And the Air Force will take out a 5-year lease with an option to buy.
As a former Air Force lawyer, I could say, yeah, there's a lot of truth to that last one. right after we buy the property for our golf courses. But anyway, very good, very good. I'd like to end this segment with our own top 10 list of words of military wisdom, which I hope you all will appreciate. This very first one is courtesy of the United States Marine Corps, and it's basically this word of advice. Don't draw fire. It irritates the people around you. All right, another bit, tidbit from the Army supply system. Remember, the quartermaster has only two sizes, too large and too small, which reminds me of the two speeds at which the VA operates, slow and slower.
That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. From the infantry, this word of wisdom. If your advance is going well, you are walking into an ambush. What's a military expert? That's someone who tells you what's going to happen tomorrow and then tells you why it didn't.
That happens.
Our fifth item is, if you can keep your head while those around you are losing theirs, you may have totally misjudged the situation. Number six on our list. The enemy invariably attacks on one of two occasions, when you're ready for them and when you're not ready for them. And number seven. The only thing more accurate than incoming enemy fire is incoming friendly fire. And number eight, those of you in the Navy, just remember, any ship can be a minesweeper once.
Mm.
Number nine, whoever said that the pen is mightier than the sword obviously never encountered automatic weapons. And finally, number 10, just remember, stupid wars are easy to start but hard to end. And along with that, there's nothing good in war except its ending. So,
amen to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Richard, let's move on to our next topic for tonight, which is our regular Veterans History segment.
Yeah, tonight I would like to recognize various African Americans who, just like the recent movie Hidden Figures, have played historic roles in the U.S. military. And if anyone has not seen that movie, Hidden Figures, please, treat yourself. Bring the family, bring the young kids, your daughters. It's outstanding. The first general
Hidden Figures, Richard?
Yeah, Hidden Figures, yeah. First general officer, on October 25th, 1940, Benjamin O. Davis Sr. became the first African-American to serve as a general officer in the U.S. Army. General Davis entered the military service on July 18, 1898. During his military career that spanned the next 50 years, he served in a wide range of duties, both overseas as well as stateside. His son, Benjamin O. Davis Jr., became the first African-American general in the U.S. Air Force. First African-American West Point grad, this fellow's well-known. In 1877, Henry O. Flipper became the first African-American to graduate from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He was assigned to the 10th U.S. Cavalry, one of only two black cavalry regiments organized after the Civil War. Assigned to the 10th Cavalry over Buffalo Soldiers, which is a Negro cavalry regiment nicknamed Buffalo Soldiers by Native American tribes because of the similar features, for instance, the hair, and it resembled a buffalo. And these Buffalo soldiers fought in the Indian Wars. Flipper was a lieutenant, and he fought twice at Eagle Springs, Texas, during the Victorio campaign against the Apache Indians, which occurred in 1880. In 1881, he was framed by white officers and charged with embezzlement. He was found not guilty, but guilty of conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. He was dishonorably discharged. His family fought his dishonorable discharge even after his death in 1940. In 1976, with the recognition of his treatment, he was finally granted an honorable discharge by the Department of the Army. A bust of Lieutenant Flipper was unveiled at West Point the same year. In 1999, President Clinton granted him a full pardon, and West Point now gives an award in his honor, to the graduating senior who has displayed the highest qualities of leadership, self-discipline, perseverance in the face of unusual difficulties while a cadet. For the women, their first African-American female colonel, World War II brought out the best in America's young people. By 1943, 183 African-American nurses held commissions in the Army Nurse Corps. During the war, African-American nurses served in all theaters of the war, including Burma, Africa, Australia, and England. At the conclusion of the war, about 600 African-American nurses served, and one of these nurses was Margaret E. Bailey, who accepted a commission in June 1944. On July 15, 1964, Bailey became the first African-American promoted to lieutenant colonel in the Army Corps Nurse Corps. In 1970, she was promoted to full colonel. Finally, first African-American four-star general, Roscoe Robinson, Jr., attended West Point and graduated in 1951 with a degree in military engineering. After graduating, he served in the Korean War as a platoon leader and company commander. He received the Bronze Star. In 1963, he graduated from the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. He received a master's degree from the University of Pittsburgh in 1964. In 1967, he served as a battalion commander in Vietnam and received the Legion of Merit, the Distinguished Flying Cross, 11 Air Medals, and 2 Silver Stars. He was promoted to Brigadier General and in 1975 became the commanding general of the U.S. Army Garrison Okinawa. After a battle with leukemia, General Roscoe Robinson, Jr. died on July 22, 1993, at the age of 64. He was buried at Arlington National Cemetery. So this evening, as part of our Veterans History segment, we salute African Americans who have served in the United States military.
Thank you, Richard. I always enjoy the history segment and hope our listeners do as well. We're going to continue this every week. Now I'd like to shift gears and spend a few minutes talking about people who are both veterans and non-veterans who donate their time and other resources to help veterans. Many do so under the auspices of the Department of Veterans Affairs Voluntary Service, or what they call the VAVS. It was founded way back in 1946 to provide for our nation's veterans while they were cared for by VA healthcare facilities. It's one of the largest centralized volunteer programs in the federal government, and there are more than 7,400 national and community organizations that support the program, either through donations or through volunteers. Since the creation of the voluntary service in 46, volunteers have provided over 760 million hours of their service. Much of that service is provided in VA medical facilities, whether it's hospital wards, nursing homes, veteran outreach centers, other community-based volunteer programs. And the program also includes financial contributions. And annual contributions usually run about $90 million in gifts and other donations. And these volunteers really are providing a valuable service. As we've mentioned many times, the VA healthcare system is short of employees on the order of over 37,000 just on the healthcare side. And a lot of valuable efforts are made by volunteers. So you might be asking yourself, how can you become a VA voluntary service volunteer? There's a couple ways to do that. You can go online to their website, which is volunteer.va.gov, and you can sign up. You can start the process online, basically. You can also find out about the nearest facilities in your area, find out what their needs are as far as volunteers, and then they can help you as far as the initial interview, the orientation and training and finding out an assignment that meets their needs and meets your interests. You can also contact the VA Voluntary Service National Office in Washington, D.C. Their number is 202-461-7300. Again, the National Office for the VA Voluntary Service is area code 202-461-7300. And again, the website is volunteer.va.gov. I mean, there's so many volunteers that help, and veterans by their nature, many of the volunteers are veterans themselves, and it's their way to give back to the community and to help other veterans. So if you're interested, it's a really important program. It's certainly not the only one. In upcoming weeks, we're going to be highlighting other veteran groups that we know of, and I welcome listeners to call in and share their experiences. Again, our toll-free number to call in is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. So it's a great program. Wanted to spend some time putting in a good word for the voluntary service. But again, if volunteering is not for you and you're looking for a paying job, the VA, as I said, has over 45,300 vacancies around the country, and probably in the order of about 37,000 of those are in the healthcare side. So you can go to va.gov/jobs for more information if you're interested in looking for a paid position for employment with the VA. So I hope that's useful information. And, Rick, I think it's time for Hurley's tips tonight.
Yeah, that's great stuff, David, and great information for people who want to get involved. Yep, tonight's my Hurley's tips, and we speak a lot all over Florida and sometimes out of the state, and we a lot of times we have to get back to basics, and that's what we're going to do tonight. I can sum up the one word today for Hurley's tips, and that's deadlines. When you are dealing with the VA disability claim system, you will quickly learn that there are different deadlines for different stages of the case. Some deadlines are short, like 30 days. Others are as long as 1 year. You know, routinely we get correspondence. I should say our clients get correspondence, and you and I both get phone calls. And you know, right away they say, this has to be responded to in 30 days or 60 days. Unfortunately, our clients, because of us, David, are watching their mail, and so when these types of notices come in, they do the right thing and they immediately contact us. Unfortunately, I don't think that is the case for majority of veterans. I think they avoid VA mail and therefore they avoid looking at these dates and acting. Here's an example. To appeal an initial VA decision by filing a notice of disagreement, you have also 30 days to file what they call a 5103 notice during the processing of a claim when the VA asks you if you have any more evidence before it makes a decision. You have 60 days to file a response to a statement of the case. And that's a clever one, I think, because the actual wording of and letting the veteran know that it's 60 days is at the bottom of that first page. And a lot of veterans, you know, can't get past the first paragraph because the claim basically is being denied. So rather than read through the whole 2 or 3 page document, they, you know, throw their arms up and they walk away from it.
Right.
And we see that, and that's something that you really have to respond to. And then also there's 120 days to appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims from the final Board of Veterans, the BVA decision. One would think the VA is very good at telling you of those deadlines, but they are not. There's that duty to assist you're talking about again, David. God help us that the duty to assist goes away and these veterans aren't informed by the VA that they have an obligation if they want to appeal to meet these deadlines. But again, the veteran must actually read and pay attention to your correspondence and the fine print. And if you have a representative, go to the representative. If you have a lawyer, go to the lawyer, but don't ignore it because it's just going to complicate your appeal. A second tip for tonight is how to keep up with what is going on with your case. It requires persistence in contacting the VA in multiple ways, including the phone, email, online inquiry, personal visit, and congressional complaint. By phone, the VA has a toll-free customer service number of 1-800-827-1000. For cases at the Board of Veterans Appeals, the status lines are 1-800-923-8387 or 202-632-4623. Emails can be sent to the Regional Office Inquiry Team. Example, St. Petersburg Regional Office Inquiry Team's email is inquiryteam.vbaspt@va.gov. That is inquiryteam.vbaspt@va.gov.
And Richard, if I could just interject there, I've used that email quite a bit as a way to kind of rattle the cage and get some answers about what's going on with a particular case. And I found that usually the team is responsive. It might take them a few days to get back. But every regional office is going to have its own inquiry team. They'll have their own appeals team. And if you have trouble finding the email, give us a call, and we'll dig it up for you, because it's another very important way to put pressure on the VA. Let them know that you're out there waiting.
Yeah. You know, online inquiries can be made through the VA website, through the VA's IRIS, I-R-I-S system. IRIS stands for Inquiry Routing and Information System. You can find it by going to www.va.gov and clicking on the Contact Us link. From that next page, look for IRIS links, and from there, look for the link to Ask Us a Question. As you can see, there are many layers in page, and it takes patience and digging through those websites. And I would also add, you know, go to our website, CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com. We have a very informative and I think a very user-friendly website, which offers a lot of the same information that the VA website offers. Other options are to go to your regional office and go to the customer service in room 222 that's on the second floor in St. Petersburg. Ask to speak with a staff person about the status of your case. You can also go through your representative in Congress, including your representative in the House. Call Gus Bilirakis. Let him know that you want some action, or your two senators. Whichever method you choose, be prepared to be persistent and patient. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, though.
And remember, Richard, if I could add one other thing here while we're talking about ways to try to get movement on your case, is one that we've found a few of our clients have been able to do successfully, which is going through the media. You know, most television stations have some sort of a program where they will intercede with the government or some other problem that a viewer has. And our local stations in Tampa, there's several of them that do that. Richard, we've got a caller on line three, so why don't we go ahead and take that. Doug, why don't we take Larry on line three?
Hello.
Hello, Larry?
Yeah.
Yes, this is David. How are you tonight?
Hi, David. I'm fine. I've been listening to your show. I didn't want to have a good flow going, but I wanted to put my two cents in about the HR 303. And I'm one of the, in fact, I'm the one that Richard was talking about earlier, 40%. And I don't know how the other veterans feel that, you know, put their 20-plus years in, and then, you know, they end up basically paying themselves for any kind of, you know, disability. But,
I think that's a great point. That's a great point. And I think there are many veterans that share, you know, that share your same concern. They're in the same boat as you are. And
Well, the way you almost feel like you're being punished for putting in the extra time.
Right.
And, you know, and I don't want to feel that way because I love the country and, you know, I was raised in the Air Force and, you know, so I've been around it my whole life. But, you know, just, you know, the first of every month, it's like getting a good slap in the face instead of, you know, a pat on the back and saying congratulations for a job well done. So
right.
I just wanted to offer that, and I don't know if everybody feels like I do, but
I think
it's real hard to take.
Right. Thank Larry. Thank you so much for calling, for sharing your views, and I encourage veterans to let their voices be heard by members of Congress, and hopefully.
Thank you,
Larry. Thank you very much for calling. I bet you most civilians aren't even aware of that situation, and I mean it's just it flies in the face of logic, you know.
Right.
So,
I mean,
you know,
people work. The veterans will serve their country for 20 years, and earn a pension that is based on the rank they achieved and how many years of service. Some serve 20, some maybe serve 24, 26, 30, and their pension, which I can tell you, is not a lot of money to begin with. So what this law is about is trying to change the current rule is that if you have a disability on top of it, a service connected disability. And you're rated from 10 to 40%, you're not getting paid by the VA for that. And you will receive the benefit of the fact that the VA disability is not taxable like the pension, but that's really not much compensation. So it's an issue that has a very long history with Congress, and they've tinkered with it with laws over the years, but this is like the final step in in the process. So I encourage veterans to let their voices be heard and support this important bill.
I want to remind everybody that in my conversation with Bill Arrakis's secretary, she indicated that this particular bill has been in committee before, but it's never made it out of committee. So, let's get our veterans and our families of veterans and our civilians out there to flood the Bill Arrakis's phone and get some action on this.
And it's not just Congressman Bill Arrakis. If I could add, contact the House committee and go to their website that I gave out earlier, both for the House and the Senate. It's veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov. Go to the website, and you can find out who's on the committee, contact their offices, send them an email, because their emails are all through their websites, or give them a call. Send messages to the committees through the website. It couldn't be easier than that. It just takes 5 minutes or less of your time. And that's what needs to happen, because in Washington, it's whoever can bring the most attention to their bill. There's a lot going on in the country, obviously, but this is an issue that's been around for a long time, and it needs to be fixed. So thanks again to Larry for calling in tonight. Rick, I think you have another tip for tonight, and Hurley's tips.
I do, David. If you're a veteran who has left the service and are having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, and David and I, we see this quite a bit, please be aware of and use the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 888-823-7458. Hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Coaching Into Care is a national telephone service of the VA, which aims to educate, support, and empower family members and friends who are seeking care or services for a veteran. The goal is to help veterans, their family members, and other loved ones find the appropriate services at their local VA facilities and or in their community. The service also provides coaching to family and friends of veterans who see that a veteran in their life may be having difficulty adjusting to civilian life. Coaching is provided by licensed psychologists or social workers free of charge. Calls are confidential. Leaving military life is often a process that requires the support of friends, family, and often mental health professionals. The information below can help you determine if professional help might be used for adjustment and recovery. Signs and symptoms are changes in attitudes and behavior that are not keeping with the person's value, morals, or usual character. Uncharacteristic anger, anxiety, agitation, moodiness that seems difficult to understand. We see this quite a bit, David, withdrawing or isolating from family, friends, social gatherings, and activities that they previously enjoyed. Difficulty in taking care of self or other responsibilities. This may include struggling to maintain hygiene, finances, or work responsibilities. Engaging in self-destructive behaviors, including expensive alcohol or illegal drugs. Expressing feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness or suicidal thoughts such as, the world would be better off without me. For crisis, contact the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. Again, 1-800-273-8255.
And that's great. I think that's something that we're going to remind everyone every week of that. And I think that's great information, and I encourage people to use that program. It'll help veterans that they know kind of transition home from the war. Our time is just about up for tonight, and I hope it's been a show that you all have enjoyed. I'd like to thank you for listening. As you know, the Veterans News Hour, the weekly program, will be here every Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, and 6 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. You can listen to our archive programs on our website, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he's done. And we invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Give us a call. I'm David Corey at 813-662-0760. And Richard Hurley's at 727-612-1515. Our numbers are on our radio show's website in case you're interested in being a show guest, sponsor, or advertiser. Well, that's our show for tonight. Please tune in next week for another great show.
Good night, David.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.